Hi, Jeremy. I'm Tucker here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate, send the fundage, make that checker money order payable to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Call in your debit or credit card to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Support RBN, the wood stove of free speech, because on a cold, wet, rainy November morning, you can feed all sorts of good articles and information into RBN and get a great free-flowing discussion between two very intellectual gentlemen that host shows on RBN, such as Patrick and myself. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. It's good to be here.
This is our morning recording because of the bustle and hustle of the holidays. We're having to record early today. And the black coffee is flowing and the wood stove is stocked up. So I'm ready to get going. You don't drink coffee, do you?
I don't typically drink coffee unless I really need to get things moving.
If you ever decide to start, you should get blackout coffee from RBN.
I might get it anyway.
You should. Give it as a gift to your your caffeine-addicted coffee-drinking friends. Feed the addiction. Coffee has a lot of good stuff in it, too, besides just caffeine. A lot of antioxidants. But this is not Health and Wellness Tuesday. This is Patrick and Jeremy Tuesday. Let's start off with Germany preparing to accept a large influx of Gaza refugees. I caught the headline on the Stormer, and they quoted RMX News, which I have not heard of. But I guess the German embassy in Cairo, they have set up little booths there, processing centers to pull out any, quote, Germans, unquote, that are in Gaza. But they're getting the word that it's going to be more than just German citizens. So far, they say there's around 320 German citizens there, including their family members, have been able to leave Gaza safely. But they're thinking the door is just going to stay open, and Gazans are going to come into Germany. Now, here's my question. How is this going to work when Europe already has a lot of Muslim people there that do not like Israel at all, and they've been protesting Jews, and you've even had certain government officials talking about deporting any Muslim that is pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas. How's this going to work when you actually pull Gazans into Europe who, I would argue, and the Stormer argued, hate Jews way even more than just regular Muslims in Europe? What do you think?
Well, for Germany to accept refugees from Gaza would be for Germany to be complicit in their genocide, or certainly in their the ethnic cleansing. But you know, this is what's happening now is an attempt at the destruction of the Palestinian people of Gaza, and really, according to the UN Convention on Genocide, really what's going on in Gaza is genocide. But to accept the refugees, and this might seem a little bit counterintuitive, but that is to be complicit. The Egyptians so far have refused to let Gazans into Egypt because two reasons. One is, to the extent Gazans leave Gaza, they're never going back, and this is clear from history. Why are there so many people in Gaza? It 2.3 million people. It's as densely populated as Chicago. Why is this happening? It's like, why are they there? Well, they are there because they were refugees in the first place. Where are they refugees from? For the most part, there's some people, presumably there's some of them who are descendants from people who lived in Gaza 80 years ago, 75 years ago, but for the most part, these are people who 75 years ago were pushed out of what is today, you know, Israel, pre 1967 boundary Israel. And they got chased out of their homes, literally chased out of their homes, and they wound up in refugee camps in Gaza. So these people were already refugees. And how many of them wound up going back to their old homes in pre-1967 border Israel? Oh, zero. None of them. Okay. So they know if they leave Gaza and go to Egypt, it's known by anybody who has familiarity with this, that they're never going back to Gaza. And what would happen with Gaza? It's going to be leveled, and then it's going to be annexed to Israel. I mean, this isn't even weird conspiracy theory predictions or any kind of predictions. This is what's going to happen. This is what Netanyahu himself has said. He said that this area will be, he hasn't said annexed, but he said administered by Israel. And they are leveling. I mean, they're leveling. This is what's happening. You can look at satellite photographs. They are leveling Gaza. They have been trying to get Egypt to take these people. Now, the thing is, Egypt won't take them, partly because they don't want to be party to the their displacement. They don't want to be party to Israel stealing even more territory, but also because they don't want the people. They don't want them in Egypt. Egypt, the current government in Egypt, led by General Sisi, he became leader of Egypt through a coup d'etat, overthrowing, I believe his name was Mohamed Morsi, who was a the Muslim Brotherhood. He was the Muslim Brotherhood leader who was elected president. Elected in the wake of the Arab Spring, where Hosni Mubarak, the longtime president of Egypt, military general president of Egypt, he was overthrown. They had elections, and a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood was elected president. He had support. He had broad popular support, but he was overthrown. And the current government doesn't like the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, Hamas is largely an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. The last thing they want is a million, 2 million people from Gaza in Egypt for a variety of reasons. But, you know, A, they don't want to be complicit in their displacement, and B, they don't want them there people who support the Muslim Brotherhood. They just don't want them for a variety of reasons. Now Germany's saying, okay, well, we'll take them. If Egypt merely becomes a transit point, well, they're still complicit in the replacement, the genocide or whatever, but they no longer would have to deal with the Muslim Brotherhood thing. If Germany is going to take 2.3 million Gazans, well, then they're Germany's problems. Now, you alluded to, these are going to be people who super won't like the Jews, obviously. I don't think this is going to happen. We can talk about why I don't think it's going to happen, what I do think is going to happen. But if Germany is doing this, I mean, if Germany is actually saying that they're prepared to accept these refugees, this is really, really a problem for Germany to be that cucked to the Israelis, who hate them. Obviously, they hate the Germans. They've grown up with this whole, largely fabricated narrative about how mean the Germans were to them. To their ancestors, for Germany to be that cucked to say that they're going to participate in the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, that's really reprehensible. So anyway, back to you, Jeremy.
There were some opposition politicians in Germany talking about, hey, we want to be careful not to bring Hamas terrorists over, you know, when we accept these refugees. So their opposition is not based on any, human guidelines of ethnic cleansing, but rather the need to avoid having terrorists, which is interesting because they don't worry about accepting any other. All throughout the last 6 or 7 years, as Europe has brought refugees in, specifically Germany, quote-unquote refugees, they've not really voiced any concern about this before. And as the Muslim populations in Europe, you know, riot and just continue to wreak havoc, they dare not, you know, push back against them because it would be racist and stuff. But now all of a sudden it's a worry of getting Hamas into Europe. Found that kind of interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that this, I don't see this going on forever, and I don't see the United States or Israel. I mean, Israel's party to this, but they're the driving force. But the United States and Germany and the EU, they are not going to be the ones resolving this. The balance of world power has shifted away from the United States and Germany and Israel. It's shifted away, and the balance of power has shifted towards China and Russia. And when you look at the other countries at play, they're on the side of China and Russia. Obviously, you've got the entire Muslim world, which includes countries stretching from Morocco on the Atlantic Ocean, all across Northern Africa, all across Southern Asia, with the exception of India, and going all the way to Indonesia on the Pacific. This massive number of countries, all of them are just dead set against what Israel's doing. And then you look at the African countries, and they're against what Israel's doing. There's a few countries, tiny countries, who are paid off by Israel, but even these countries. Here's an interesting thing. When Netanyahu, I don't know how much longer he's going to be prime minister of Israel, because he was already, half of the country was out in the streets demonstrating against him earlier this year into the summer. Half the country really doesn't like Netanyahu. A lot of Jews, like Jews in America, the Jews in America in general, just kind of blindly support Israel. But the intelligentsia, they don't just, the intelligentsia in America, they will look at, the various factions, the political factions in Israel. And a lot of the intelligentsia don't like Netanyahu. They prefer other politicians who could potentially replace him, you know. And Netanyahu, it's not just that he's corrupt, but he's been very aggressively pushing. He's just been going on a double or nothing strategy. He's been pushing the settler movement. He's been very aggressive with Iran, and there are lots who don't like this. And I haven't seen the interview myself yet, but David Duke was telling me last night about this. Jake Tapper, who was on CNN, Jake Tapper was interviewing Netanyahu, and Jake Tapper was extremely aggressive with Netanyahu, apparently. Like I said, I haven't heard it. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of Jews don't like what Netanyahu's doing. What's Netanyahu doing? Well, I mean, he is, in the name of the Jews, he is just committing crimes so obvious that it's getting people to question the power of the Jews. It's getting not just not just the morality or lack thereof of the leaders of Israel, but why is it that the United States is giving them carte blanche? What could that be? Could it be that the United States is under the control, or at least under the influence of of Jews? Is it because there's a Jewish problem? It's got people talking about Jewish power. It's got Elon Musk talking about Jewish power. And the intelligentsia, they see this, and this, they're, frankly, a lot of them are pissed off. So back to you, Jeremy.
Yeah, everybody's going to have to cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks because they're just flowing like the East River. Speaking of this Muslim coalition and adults coming to the table, you know, you had this whole thing where our Saudi Arabia meets with Iran earlier this year, and that was stemming from, I guess, trade issues in the wake of the Russia-Ukrainian conflict. And they've met again recently over this Israel thing, which is significant with Sunnis and Shiites meeting together. And now we have this, this is my question, how is this going to affect Yemen and the Houthis? We got this story, I think RT ran it, RT ran it, of a Houthi helicopter landing on an Israeli-owned ship and taking it over in the name of Shiite Muslim, and this was sort of a backlash against Israel. So, you know, the Houthis based in Yemen, I'm assuming that's why Saudi Arabia has been genociding Yemenis, is because they house the Houthi tribe there, which is a tribe, and it's also a political organization named after the tribe, right? So I wonder if we can see these people coming to the table, Houthis and Saudis, because, you know, I'm pretty sure Iran backs the Houthis. So it's an Israeli-owned ship, but I think also Japanese were involved. Didn't get a chance to read the whole thing. But anyway, what do you got on that?
Okay. So Yemen, which is kind of, for most Americans, might as well be Timbuktu. Yemen, where's Yemen? It's remote. Well, if you look at a globe and you look at the Arabian Peninsula, most of the Arabian Peninsula is in Saudi Arabia, but these coastal areas in the south and along the Persian Gulf, there's a bunch of countries. There's, you know, half a dozen countries. So Yemen in the very south, and then as you curl around, and Yemen has it has coasts both along the Red Sea and along the Gulf of Aden, which is an arm of the Indian Ocean. And then you go along from, and these used to be for a period of time, a long period of time in the Cold War, you had North Yemen along the.
And I'm alone. Skin, yet you.
So excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Red Sea and along the Gulf of Aden, which is an arm of the Indian Ocean. And then you go along from, and these used to be for a period of time, a long period of time in the Cold War, you had North Yemen along the Red Sea and South Yemen along the Gulf of Aden. It was divided in that, at that point, it was divided more at least nominally among Soviet allied northern Yemenis and American aligned southern Yemenis. And then you go along, you got Oman, you got the United Arab Emirates, you got Qatar, you got Bahrain, and at the very north of the Persian Gulf you got Kuwait. So you got these other countries that are much smaller than Saudi Arabia. But the thing about Yemen is it's had a very growing population, and at this point, its population is over 30 million. And the Houthis, so there are divisions, geographical, historical divisions, but there's also a religious division. And the religious division, the Houthis are Shiite, which is what is prevalent in Iran. So there's been this longstanding relationship there. And the Houthis have declared war on Israel, and they do have a fair amount of weaponry because the Houthis have been involved in this civil war in Yemen. And Saudi Arabia, by the way, also has a very large Shiite population. The rulers of Saudi Arabia are Sunni, but there is a large Shiite population in Saudi Arabia. And of course, Saudi Arabia is probably it might have been the last country on earth to even have a pretense of democracy. They only started having elections, I don't know, was it in the 21st century? They started having elections, but those elections are just for like town councils or something, village elders, that type of thing. They don't really even have they don't have any national elections. It's a monarchy. It's an absolute monarchy. And the monarchy doesn't even have the pretense of being like constitutional or anything. And but because of the oil wealth, they're able, you know, they're able to buy off the population. But they do worry about possible someday having some possible revolt amongst their own Shiite population. And they have not wanted to have the Shiite Houthis dominate Yemen, which is right there. It's got a very long, if sparsely populated border with Saudi Arabia. They haven't wanted this. And Yemen. And so there has been for the past couple of decades this big rivalry between Saudi Arabia and Iran, partly for, you know, domination of the region. They both are along the Persian Gulf, and the conflict, the internal civil war in Yemen played into this. So because there's been a civil war, there's lots of arms in lots of weaponry, modern advanced weaponry in Yemen. The Houthis are in control of a lot of weaponry. So they've been lobbing missiles at Israel, which American ships, anti-missile systems on American ships in the Mediterranean, maybe they're in the Red Sea. They've been shooting them down. The United States is part of this conflict actively. Whereas Hamas doesn't have helicopters, well, the Houthis do. And so apparently they've landed on a ship and taken control of it. So that's what I've got on the background. So what actually happened here?
Oh, well, the Houthis landed a helicopter on this Israeli-owned ship in the Red Sea. Since they have declared war on Israel, as you mentioned. And I guess what I'm asking is, as these groups come to the table, could we see some sort of a conflict resolution there between Saudi Arabia and Sunnis and their Shiite population and the Shiite Houthis in Yemen?
Well, yeah, and Hamas is not Shiite. Hamas is Sunni, but they have had good relations with various Shiite groups and groupings. So the one big country that is thoroughly dominated by Shiites is Iran. Most of Bahrain, which is a tiny little island off the coast of Saudi Arabia, and that also has, as I recall, a majority Shiite population. It's ruled by a monarchy, but for the most part, Shiites are a minority population, and they're pretty much limited to the Arabian Peninsula and the...
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off LLC, 417-932-6419.
Memory, your lifeline is burning holes. Recover the damage. Bring it all home. Follow the blues, just like a summer song. Instead of
ruled by a monarchy, but for the most part, Shiites are a minority population, and they're pretty much limited to the Arabian Peninsula and the area of the Middle East just north of the Arabian Peninsula. So they are the biggest group in Iraq. They're the biggest group in Iraq, but traditionally have not dominated the government, although now they do. And then they are not the biggest group in Syria, but they are the Assad family is a member of the Alawite community, which is basically an offshoot of Shiite. And then they are the biggest group in Lebanon as well. So those are the countries where you have these populations, and of course, Iran and Syria and Lebanon. In particular, the Hezbollah movement, which is a Shiite movement in Lebanon, they have good relations with Hamas. So Hamas has good relations with these Shiite movements. And it also, like I said, it's basically an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. Egypt administered Gaza before 1967. So one thing is, these are all religious movements. You know, we're talking about religious movements, religious people. And in most of the Muslim world, you have secular leaders, whether they're monarchs or whether they are, you know, elected people. But you have secular leaders who have to deal with a religious population. This is causing all sorts of what would you call it? I don't know if chaos is the right word, but this conflict has massive implications for the whole world. This is easily as important as the war in Ukraine, and the war in Ukraine was already reshaping the world. This is also reshaping the world. Here's one, and in a lot for a lot of things, But for Jewish power, this is a massive problem. There's something that Dr. Duke and I were talking about last night. We came to this agreement. So you've got Gilad Atzmon, who said that the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power. And the corollary to that, and the flip side, what necessarily follows from that, is the discussion of Jewish power. Right? Okay, so let me try to say it the way we got into it. So the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power. And here's the corollary. The vulnerability of Jewish power is the discussion of Jewish power. The discussion of Jewish power is the destruction of Jewish power. And this has people talking about Jewish power. This is why Jake Tapper is freaking out. And the longer this goes on, the more of a discussion there's going to be, the more this spreads. It's not as if Israel is going to be militarily defeated by Hamas. Hamas's weapon, their main weapon, it's not their rockets. They have rockets. It's not their rockets. It's not their hang gliders. It's their willingness to martyr themselves. And through martyrdom, they are defeating the Israelis, and they are changing the world. They are changing the world big time because they are provoking. They provoked a crisis. And part of that crisis is the discussion of Jewish power worldwide. And it's a condemnation of Jewish power in most of the world. And then in places like the United States, it's like, how are they going to keep the lid on this thing? So what do you think about some of those points, Jeremy?
The discussion of Jewish power on a global scale has caused elite Jews to be even more, is the word, neurotic than ever before. I mean, any little criticism or pushback against the system at all is literally another show up. And it's rippling right down to your rank and file, like regular Jewish people who don't want any part of this. You know, the One Coalition for Peace Jews, not in our name. So then, what's the name of that group real quick before I go on?
Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yes, Jewish Voice for Peace. And so the, you know, Jewish power at the very top, I mean, they're starting to get nervous and they're starting to get careless and reckless because they've been drunk with power for so long. So I was thinking about this when I revisited Macbeth recently, the Shakespearean play. So, you know, Macbeth, he gets this prophecy from the witches that he's going to be king, but yet there's King Duncan of Scotland with his sons who are, you know, set to take over the throne. So Macbeth and Lady Macbeth hatch this plan to kill the king and kind of help prophecy along. And as you're following along, Macbeth has to keep killing more people and committing more murders to cover up. You know, he has to murder his best friend Bancroft because Bancroft's children were prophesied to be king and he's a threat to Macbeth. Well, he has to kill the people that he hired to kill Bancroft. And so you see this man get very neurotic by the middle of the play, or if you're watching a movie version of the movie. And there are people that are very closest to him that are in on it, right? They know about his murder of Duncan. They know he's illegitimate, but they're going along with it anyway because they have a certain amount of power that Macbeth has granted them. So they know the whole thing, and that's the reason they're not talking about, you know, Macbeth's crime, is because they want the power, right? Then you've got people in the middle level that kind of know a little bit about it, but not a lot. They know something's wrong, and they interact with the king enough to know that something is not right. There's something that smells really bad, right, at the top. But then there's the rank and file peasants that don't know anything about what Macbeth has done. They just know that things are really bad for him now because the king is living a totally decadent life. He's having, like, dogs and bears fight in cages for entertainment. He's extracting.
I'm sorry. Did you say eagles and bears?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Shakespeare would have written that into the play, but I know dogs and bears for sure. I mean, this guy's just, it's very obvious to the peasants that something's out of control here. Their taxes are worse than ever. There's people starving. I mean, the people at the very bottom know there's something wrong, but they just can't put their finger on it because no one's talking about it. But then you get to the end of the play when General Macduff goes over to England, gets Duncan's sons who were in exile, and they get the English army, and they're going to come back, and they're going to take care of Macbeth. They siege his castle. And as Macbeth's closest followers look out and see the English army coming, they've cut down branches, basically, and little shrubs and trees so that it looks like just a forest, right? So that you can't tell the true number of them. But they start bailing. When Macbeth's supporters see this, they bail on him. And he gets very frantic. He starts having people killed before they can leave the castle. It gets bad. And then finally, of course, the movie culminates in Macbeth refusing to give up the crown, even though everybody's deserted him, and Macduff defeats him in single combat. So I said all that to say what? Well, this is kind of how I see Jewish power work, and there's people really close to it, like the billionaires. I would say people like Musk. We know Kanye West. I definitely knew about them. Anybody that has any kind of power politically or monetarily knows about it. They're not saying anything because they want to keep their power, right? Then you got the lower, middle of the way people that sort of know about it, but they just don't, they haven't put everything together yet. And then just the regular run-of-the-mill people that don't know anything about it. They just know things are really, really bad now. That's kind of the way that I see it. And so when people like Musk do break silence, you know, that's significant because they're risking. I mean, Twitter lost half its value. I've heard it went from 40 something billion to 22 billion very rapidly. And we saw that with West, right? That advertisers can pull, and you think you're a billionaire until advertisers start pulling it. And then your fortune is reduced tremendously. So I don't know. What do you think about that analysis?
I think it's really good. The one caveat that I'm going to put in there is that while the people at the top of American society who were to a large extent bought off by Jewish power, or they are doing very well from themselves based on Jewish power or in an environment of Jewish power, they you would think that they understand more about it than people lower down, and I think that's true. But I contend that people, even people at the top, probably have far less understanding of Jewish power than people who listen to RBN, which is among the wisest radio audience in the world. And they are. They're also kind of goofy, but they really do. And if you people heard my show from Friday, you'll know what those references are to. I think that the level of understanding in even amongst the elite, even amongst members of Congress who are complete paid shills for Israel, that the level of understanding of Jewish power is way less than we would think. These people, for instance, the people in Congress, they know that if they go against Israel, if they talk about certain things, that they're going to get a well-funded primary opponent. You're already getting that. Some of these people in the squad, these half a dozen or so black and brown people in the House of Representatives, they are getting primary opponents. That's already happening. They're getting well-funded primary opponents who support Israel and they're getting these opponents because they have expressed sympathy to Hamas. This is already happening. And so they have an idea. They know they shouldn't cross certain lines, but they don't really have a very good idea. And you look at the case of Marjorie Taylor Greene, who granted is not very intelligent, but you know, she got into Congress and she's pro-Israel, but she started calling her own enemies Nazis and got smacked down for that. She's like, what? I'm using your cartoon villain as a villain, right? No, you're not allowed to do that. She didn't know. She didn't have this understanding. These people don't have a very good understanding. I'm sure they don't. Their level of understanding's low. And, you know, this is one of the things that's going to be happening, because now you're actually having a discussion of Jewish power. And Elon Musk, we talk about Elon Musk as somebody who's now talking about Jewish power. He's not even talking about it so much. He's simply retweeting, oh, who's that guy in Ireland? There's some young guy in Ireland who, I was on a program, I think, with him and Mark Collett once a few years back. What's his last name?
I want to say Woods, but
yeah, I think it's Keith Wood. Keith Wood, not Keith Partridge. That's a different Keith. The boomers know what I'm talking about. So, and then you heard the interview. You may have heard the interview. A lot of people did, between Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson. But their level of understanding of Jewish power is really low. And Candace Owens admits it. I mean, or at least pretends. But when you hear them talk, they really don't understand it very well. I think there's going to be a lot of learning that goes on here. Why am I talking about Jewish power? I don't know. I always default to talking about Jewish power, but that's because Jewish power really is as important to the study of international relations and political science as gravity is to the study of physics. It's the central organizing feature of world politics.
Well, I think that's very evident, especially in the last 2 years, and more especially in the last month, since the slaughter of Gazan children. But no, I will concede to your point that these people, even closest to Jewish power, don't really understand it as well, because look at what Joe Biden said. You know, that they have, in theology, we have a saying about someone that knows about the Bible, but they don't really know it thoroughly enough to like wield it as a weapon. They know just enough to be dangerous.
What do you call those people? What do you call those people? I'm curious.
People that know the Bible, but they just know enough to be dangerous. I don't think we really have a name for them.
Okay.
I was going to mention Joe Biden, you know, making speeches that we really appreciate the Jews for, you know, bringing us homo marriage and, you know, things like that. I think when politicians slip up and say things like that, they don't. And that was before his senility, wasn't it? That was like seven or eight years ago.
That was while he was sitting vice president.
Yeah. So it's not that he was senile. It's just that he thought he was doing something good. And I'm pretty sure like Haaretz and, you know, all the Israeli publications came out and were like, no. Anyway. No, I can see your point. That's interesting. Everything's kind of compartmentalized. It's kind of how the military worked. I was stationed in Qatar with the people that received the direct missions and what was going on. And then on the other side of the room, we could all see each other. There was a desk of people that were supposed to load up the cargo for the missions. And my job was to arrange mechanics and parts so that the airplanes that were broke could do the missions. But I didn't know what the missions were. Neither did the cargo guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just one small example. There's a lot of compartmentalization in the military. That power works that way too.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. That people know their role in a project, but they don't exactly even know where that role fits in. They know their role, but they don't know exactly how that role fits into the big picture.
Sometimes when your hopes have all been shattered, throw it a journey. You wonder how you keep going.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly, and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
They don't exactly even know where that role fits in. They know their role, but they don't know exactly how that role fits into the big picture. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point.
And so what's going on now with the discussion of Jewish power? It would be like if it would be as if all of us in the control room started talking about what the mission was and why we're hauling this and where it's going. You know, maybe that's what it would be like. And, yeah. You know, they keep things compartmentalized so that the enemy can't infiltrate just one area and learn everything about the mission, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons. But if it's openly talked about, then the mission collapses.
Yeah. And it is being openly talked about. And this project is really to the detriment of the state of Israel and to Jewish power. It's really to the detriment. I don't see any way... Maybe I'll be wrong. I've been wrong about things that I'd studied before, but not for a long time. And I'm pretty confident that this is really going to be to the detriment of Israel, that Israel, at a minimum, if it just stopped right now, at a minimum, I think it would lose its settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And this is... this is going to lead to the displacement of 600,000 Jews, at least 600,000 to 700,000 Jews from the West Bank and potentially East Jerusalem. They're going to have to relocate. I think a lot of the people in Gaza are going to wind up going into homes that were built for Jewish settlers in the West Bank, because they just don't have a right to the fact that, I mean, these settlers. So what you're going to have an international conference. The international conference is going to create an independent Palestinian state along the lines of UN Resolution 242. At a minimum, that's going to happen. And when the Palestinians take over, gain actual sovereignty over these territories, they will have every right to expel the illegal aliens. And these Jews who have created settlements are illegal aliens. They have no right to be there. Under international law, it was a war crime to put them there in the first place. And they have no right to be there. This is at a minimum. But the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be for the Jews and for Israel. But we are coming up at the end of the show. Jeremy, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad that you came on my show.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's your show.
And I was going to say, when the oil-producing states all come together on this, Israel's economy is pretty bad right now, and they're really relying on the United States to prop it up. If that money's cut, then they're going to have to come to the table. So anyway, I appreciate your analysis. Tune in tomorrow, everyone, for National Bugle Part 2. Patrick and Jeremy, National Bugle. Stay classic.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.